Happy Father's Day. Wow, yeah. Do we have any dads in the house? Yeah, if you're a father, if you identify as a father, regardless of your gender, please stand and let us bless you. All right. And we have a blessing up on the screen. It's a little different than usual, so pay attention. Let's bless the fathers. Fathers, we love you, we bless you, we appreciate you, and we behold the divine Father that you are in your truest expression of spiritual strength. Thank you, thank you. And all of you online, all you dads out there, I hope you felt that blessing. So I always feel like I need to include in any Father's Day or Mother's Day message the disclaimer. And that is, you may have not had a good relationship with your father or any at all. And so I am aware that this day can bring up pain, can bring up uncomfortable feelings, like everybody's celebrating and, I didn't have that experience. So I want you to know that we feel with you and we honor you for being here today anyway. And to know that the message is bigger than just our biological fathers or the people who raise us. So when we think of fathers, there are some traditional roles that we hold for them. And probably the primary two that we talk about is being a provider and a protector. And so I want to look at those roles today and open them up a little bit to see what is the depth of that message of what does it really mean to be a provider and what does it really mean to be a protector and for us to be the recipients of provision and protection. So at face value, they're important roles, right? We, you know, need food on the table, so to speak. Families need material things and so on. They need their physical needs met. That's, of course, that provider role. And we all want to feel safe and secure. When we think of a dad's role, we might think of, you know, he's going to take care of it when there's a burglar in the house, you know, or something like that. So as we look at the depth, we look at some of the ways these roles are overlooked and some of the ways that they're underplayed. When I was 7 years old, we moved from Illinois to Michigan, and I was getting used to this new place. Everything was new, right? School, neighborhood, house, and everything. And my sister didn't share a room with me anymore. My sisters were older, and they got to have their own rooms, so that meant I got my own room, which was a mixed blessing for me at the age of 7 because I didn't have the comfort of my big sis. And so I would lie awake in this strange house and hear strange noises. And I remember one particular night, it was like everything was sort of shadowy and noisy, and I was trying to be really brave, and I was just like laying in the bed, and I kept hearing this, and pretty soon, I was sure what was going on in our basement, and I had absolutely convinced myself that there was this very, I can even see him in my imagination now, very tall, monster-like man who had, you know, those cinder blocks, those really big... Those were his feet. And he was walking all over the basement. I don't know why he was there, what he was doing with those big old feet, but he was scaring the heck out of me. And so finally, I couldn't stand it anymore, so I shot down the hallway, and I woke up my dad, and I told him all about it, what was happening in the basement, and that he needed to go and see. And bless his heart, you know, he didn't say, oh, honey, go back to bed. It's just your imagination, you know. He walked all the way, 2 a.m, he walks all the way across the house in his underwear, all the way down the basement stairs. And he was gone a while, so I knew he looked everywhere, which was very reassuring. I mean, for a while, it was a little nerve-wracking, but he did come back, and he reported to me that all was well, that nobody was downstairs, and that I was probably hearing the sounds of the furnace that I wasn't used to. Ah, information. That's important, right? So I could go back to sleep, and luckily he got to go back to sleep as well. But you know, what was he providing? It was, yeah, it was a sense of physical protection, but it was more than that. There was an emotional anchoring there. There was a sense that there's peace and that we can all rest easy now, right? There's a sense of that, the peace that comes with a sense of security, with comes with a sense of safety, with a sense of protection. Can you think of a time that somebody did that for you? That somebody offered you a sense of feeling protected? Just take a moment to see if you can remember a time. And as you recall it, see, what is it that that person did that allowed you to feel reassured, that brought you a sense of peace? And can you think of a time when you felt anxious or afraid and you turned within to the presence and the power within you? Tap that presence and power right now. Just take a moment to drop into it. Returning to that song, I am safe. All is well. That's the truth. That's the truth that's accessible to us at all times. We just forget. We get distracted. We get distracted by a society that is full of anxiety and fear. I live with a therapist. She tells me the trends. She said, the demand is through the roof, not enough supply, and the anxiety seems to be an all-time high. But the truth is that we've got the peace right here and right here, right? Because it really is also about the people that we can rely on. People are wonderful to be able to rely on. And sometimes they fall short. But to know that it's always here, that it's always with us. This truth must be the best kept secret on our planet, right? That we are always safe, that all is well in truth. Because all around our planet right now, what's happening is this rising popularity, this desire for a strong man. And that strong man is the old school kind of strong man, right? We're looking for that kind of domineering, authoritative type of leader. Somebody who will save the day. There's a desperate almost search for a savior. And it's happening everywhere. And so it's not really a surprise, though. It's actually quite understanding when you think about the circumstances. We've been through a worldwide pandemic, and every so often it just sort of, you know, raises its head again and says, oh, still around. We have two major wars that are in the news all the time, so we get that constant reminder and heartbreak of what's going on there. And we always have this looming climate crisis behind it all, this existential concern. No wonder. No wonder we're feeling a bit anxious, right? So it's good to acknowledge the elephants in the room. It's good to say, yeah, this is understandable. And to notice that collectively we might all be a little bit like that 7-year-old girl I once was, alone in my room in the dark and very scared with an active imagination of what might really be going on or what might be happening next, right? So who wouldn't want somebody you can call on the hotline and say, could you swoop in and save the day? Because I'm nervous. But here's the truth. We're not 7-year-olds. We're adults. And an important layer on that, we're spiritually aware adults. We have tools available to us. We have an awareness and practices available to us. The only thing that stands between our anxiety and our faith is our practice. That's all. That's it. It's really quite simple, isn't it? It's the hard part is slowing down enough to go, oh, right. I remember how I felt on Sunday when Lisa was singing to me, all is well. I am safe. And I felt that, and I remembered that, and I knew that. And all I have to do is shift in this moment and breathe and remember the truth. I have a divine protector and a divine provider within me at all times. So it's a matter of faith. It's also a matter of trust, isn't it? We have to trust the people around us. And, you know, I think the thing is, I bet we all in this room would agree that there are more people out there that you could trust to do the right thing than not. Would you agree with that? How many of you would agree with that? Look around the room. Most of us agree that humans are trustworthy for the most part, right? So lean into that. Lean into that knowing instead of focusing on the not trusting part. Lean into that knowing. And I want to encourage us all to begin every meeting, every relationship with trust. Why do we assume that people have to earn our trust? Spirit would never do that. Spirit doesn't require us to earn the qualities. We just get them, right? So why wouldn't we begin our relationships with, I trust you? Because you're a human being, most human beings are trustworthy, and because I know this is part of my spiritual practice. And guess what happens? When we trust somebody, they are trustworthy. Because there's something in us that rises to the occasion of the expectation that somebody holds for us. And, you know, maybe somebody will fall out of trust with you. Let them start with the benefit of the doubt. And if they lose your trust, if they do something that erodes your trust, well, then you can deal with that, right? But let's start out with a head start for everyone. It'll make a big difference, I think, in our world. Trust your intuition over your fear. Trust your innate guidance over that. The second fatherly quality that I want to dig into a little bit more is this provider idea. Now, that's a lot of pressure for one person, right? To provide all the material needs of a family. I mean, in some cases, it might be easier than others, but for most families, especially if you go worldwide and even within our own country, that is not feasible for one person to be the provider. It's, you know, so it's recognizing that the ideal situation here is not so much that one person is providing, that typically father is the provider for all, but instead the holder and the exemplar of prosperity. Because that's what we're really talking about underneath it, right? Is that there is a consciousness of prosperity, a consciousness that there is something available to us that is greater than maybe what is being manifested in this moment. And it's also about co-creativity of how we contribute and come together as a family, as a community, as an institution, as an organization, as a nation, whatever it may be. Charles Fillmore was the father of unity, you could say. He was co-founder along with Mother Myrtle, his wife. And in 1927, he wrote a tract called The Law of Providing, actually it was called The Providing Law. And in it, he talked about what prosperity is, and he said, prosperity isn't so much about money, it's about ideas. Specifically, in his book, Prosperity, he says, begin at once to cultivate large ideas and make them substantial by believing in them. When we shall have attained the consciousness of which our ideas become tangible, all our demands will be quickly fulfilled by higher law. So he's talking about cultivating large ideas, making them substantial by believing in them and trusting that we will attain a certain consciousness of prosperity by doing that, and the manifestation will come according to the higher law. Cultivating large ideas. The provider generates that sense of ideas and puts action in to demonstrate the prosperity, right? So how can you enhance your own ability to provide for yourself, for your family, for whoever is in your care, or whoever matters to you, their well-being? Begin at once. Begin at once, he says. I love that. Begin at once. Why wait, right? Begin at once. Cultivate large ideas and make them substantial by believing in them. And once we put those ideas into action, we are in that process of the law of circulation. The law of circulation that says, as I give, so I receive. I'm in that process of that loop of giving and receiving. I'm now in the divine flow of prosperity. The provision has come. And the provision continues to come as we work the law. So it's not a one-person job, though. Let's return to that idea. It's not a one-person job for a family, for a ministry, for an organization, for anyone. To thrive, we need everyone, all hands on deck. My dad actually, by reverse example, if you will, or my mom's example, actually taught me a lesson around this as well. As a provider, my parents had those very traditional roles, you know, and my dad was the family provider. And I'm sure he took pride in that and would take embarrassment at the idea that he maybe couldn't provide for his family. But he took a risk at one point and started his own business. And for some time, he didn't take a salary, and they had gone through their savings. And he didn't talk to us about that. I mean, he and my mom talked about it, but you know, my sisters and I knew nothing about this. So it kind of perplexed me when summer ended and my mom said, why don't you keep your job in the school year? And my parents had always encouraged us to be involved in school activities and to work in the summer. So it was, oh, that's interesting. Why does she want me to keep my job in the school year? So suddenly, as I sat with it, though, I recognized that I was needed to be a contributor in the family. I mean, nobody said it directly, except that my mom said, maybe you should keep your job. But I had to put two and two together and figure it out. And, you know, honestly, I would have loved an honest conversation about it, but I also appreciated that my mom suggested that and that I was being asked to contribute because I did care about the well-being of my family. And I did care about the success of my dad's business and his dream coming true, which it did, and he did prosper. In the end. So we can ask ourselves that same question and remember that truth. Where can I contribute in a way to the things that matter to me? How can I contribute and be part of the whole? If you're stumped, I'll give you an answer. Here! Because I know this place matters to you. I know this community matters to you. Could I be your provider? No. Could the board of trustees be your provider? No, not solely. Can the major donors who have given to us over the years be the only providers? No. We need everybody. We need all hands on deck. We need everyone who has something to give to say, this matters to me. I can be a part of the whole. I can be a provider. I can enhance and hone my ability to provide. I can participate in the law of circulation. I can practice the difference between that chasm, between anxiety and faith, and use my practice to experience my faith and to enhance my faith community. It's an invitation for us to consider. A provider is one who trusts, right? Who trusts that to the measure of the community that, or the family or the organization or whatever it is, that what they do matters because what the bigger place does matters. What the whole does matters. So all the parts matter. A provider who's centered in spirit knows prosperity by its very nature is something that is shared. And with spiritual prosperity, there's enough for all. So a provider will also go the extra mile when they need to. I want to take a right turn here into another holiday that's happening this week, and that's Juneteenth. That's happening on Wednesday, June 19th. And I'll give you an example of somebody who got this idea of going the extra mile. Her name is Opal Lee, and in 2016, at the age of 89, she walked 1,400 miles from Fort Worth, Texas to Washington, D.C., to see if she could influence lawmakers to make Juneteenth a federal holiday. It was already a holiday in the state of Texas. And for those of you who don't know what Juneteenth is about or maybe don't have a full idea, Juneteenth, it's a bit of a bittersweet commemoration. It commemorates the date June 19th, 1865. And so the sweetness is the celebration that slaves were finally freed in Galveston, Texas. The bitterness about it is technically they had been freed 2.5 years before when Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. But they found out then, and Juneteenth became a time of celebrating the freedom for all slaves that had finally come to pass. Of course, we know it was withheld because slave owners and others who were in power wanted more free labor for the harvesting of their crops for longer, so they kept it a secret. And so that cost in dollars, that supposedly free labor, of course, had a heavy cost, right? A heavy cost of equality and justice and dignity and so on. But the freedom did come, and the freedom is something to celebrate. And 5 years after Miss Opal Lee made that long trek to Washington, D.C., Juneteenth did indeed become a federal holiday in 2021. So it is something to celebrate. At the age of 94, she acknowledged her work is not yet complete. She said, "We have simply got to make people aware that none of us are free until all of us are free." Isn't that true? And we aren't free yet, she said. So her work carries on. But that's an example of somebody who is in that kind of role, who sees themselves as somebody who's contributing and influencing the provision, in this case, of celebration and freedom and acknowledgement, and protecting her people for that purpose. Our liberation is bound up together. We all know that, right? We know that in truth. And we forget sometimes that we each hold the power to liberate. Like any good father would for a family, we expect our leaders to look out for the well-being of the people, to look out for the security and the sense of safety and peace for the people. And at the forefront of their decisions, to have those things held in mind, not personal egoic interests, not their own wealth and their own fame and their own power. And we, the people, have the power to elect who we want to be our leaders. I hear the big sighs in the room. True providers are not greedy, right? They don't take, but rather they align with the divine presence and the divine power, and they give from that place, that law of circulation, that divine flow, that place of giving and receiving, that knowing that we are all in this together. They ensure that everyone has access to basic needs and maintain a sense of order. Why would we accept anything less from our leaders than we expect from ourselves? It's puzzling, this era of fear. And in this misled search that we have for this idea of the strong man in the old school sense of masculinity, right? In the old school sense of this person that would protect or that would save. We know that we all have it in us. We all have that masculine energy that is sacred masculine energy in us. we all have the propensity to be in that toxic masculine energy as well, right? We can be one who coerces and controls and overpowers to fulfill our own needs, or we can be the ones that I believe we really need and want to call in that has strength of integrity and honesty, who will lead with wisdom and compassion for the good of all, who will listen to other people with their hearts, and most of all, listen to their innate spiritual guidance for wisdom. Like Solomon, King Solomon, who when he became a leader, prayed for wisdom so that he could lead his people with wisdom. What a concept! We've gone so far astray because we've allowed ourselves to become so fearful and anxious. And we get back to that place through the power of our faith and our trust in ourselves and each other. We are Homo sapiens. I want to say, for God's sake, wise beings. That's what it means, Homo sapien, wise beings. And so our wisdom is being tested. Our compassion is being pushed. Our love is being called forth. Our ability to trust one another is being asked for. Risks are being asked of us. Our ability to call forth our faith. All of these things will call in the kind of leadership we all need in us, in each other, and in formal leadership. So I happen to believe that we do need strong men, and by that I mean spiritually strong men. I think we do need father figures amongst us right now. The kind of father figures who understand what it means to bring forth the very best in them. Integrity, honesty, the power to say no to what is unkind and unjust, and yes to that which serves life. And I'd like to offer this blessing to the men in the room, and by that I mean anybody who identifies as a man. I'd like to give you another blessing, if you'd be so willing. If you would stand, if you identify as a man, if you'd like to receive this blessing. And you can receive it if you want to remain seated too, whatever you prefer. But it provides a strength for us to see you standing in the room. So we bless all fathers and all men in this world with true power and strength. And we see them communing with their spirit, following their innate guidance, and being constantly reminded to look for and act from the deeper spiritual truth behind everything in life. These men and all men are given the courage to be vulnerable and honest and to express from their innate goodness. We see all men blessed with renewed boldness to speak up and stand up for those whose voices are silent or unheard. May their footsteps be solid on the ground of integrity, to say no to what is unfair and unkind, and yes to what is divinely aligned with the truth of love and kindness and equality and justice. Let's affirm that their hearts are filled with love, compassion, and joy. I invite you to say that with me. Your hearts are filled with love, compassion, and joy. Your minds are at peace. Your minds are at peace. And you recognize yourselves, and you recognize yourselves as strong men of spirit, as strong men of spirit. And so it is. And all of us, those of us who didn't stand, those of us who maybe identify as female or somewhere on the gender spectrum that chose not male, that we recognize and remember that masculine energy that is in us that is being called forth. What does the masculine energy, the sacred masculine, do? It supports. It holds space. It's that celebrant that stands behind us and says, you can do it. I see you. I see you standing strong. And so we all can participate in this blessing, in this moving forward for the good of all of us, to feel safe, to feel secure, to feel at peace, to feel provided for, and to know that we too are providers and protectors. So I thought I'd invite Lisa up again. I wasn't very secretive about it because I forgot she was singing with Mitch earlier. That's why I sat over here. And just want to invite you to share with each other this truth that you are safe and that all is well. Let's sing it through once for ourselves, and then let's bless the people around us with you.
All is well, all is one. All is one, I am safe. I am safe, all is well. All is well, let's do that again. All is well, all is one. All is one, I am safe. I am safe. All is well. Now we're going to bless each other. How are we going to do that, Kristen? You are well. That's great. All right. Well, all is well first.
Yeah.
All is well. Bless your neighbor. You are one. You are one. You are safe. You are safe. All is well. All is well. Let's do that again. All is well. You are one. You are one. Now you are safe. You are safe. All is well. Last line, all is well. All is well.
Can we do we?
We, oh, let's do the whole song, We Are Well.
I'm very, very
we
demanding.
We are well. It's great. We are one. We are safe. We are safe, all is well. All is well, we are well. We are well, we are one. We are one, we are safe. We are safe, all is well. All is well.
Thank you. Thank you for being so flexible. Let's close out with this statement, knowing this truth, that we are truly safe, at peace, secure. Together, I am safe, secure, and at peace. So it is. Mm-hmm.